Good morning, everyone. I'm going to be talking about some climate change adaptation and mostly mitigation efforts around various parts of the world. And this really is an opportunity when we think about a clean energy society and what it can mean for health. So I'm going to be giving some examples. The reason it's so important this year is that in 1 month, this Conference of the Parties of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change will assemble in Paris, and the goal is to establish binding agreements ambitious enough to limit global warming to less than 2 degrees centigrade, which is the cutoff level that the scientists have said we need to stay below to avoid catastrophic consequences. So this is very timely. For the world's negotiating on climate change. Now, up to this meeting in December in Paris, leading up to the meeting, every country in the world has been asked to provide, and I quote, intended nationally determined contributions to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So it's required that countries submit their goals. And this is the first time this has happened. And these goals will be negotiated, and hopefully there will be some binding resolutions. There's a lot of momentum, and there's a lot of concern. So it's so much concern that we think that this may be the time where we will get legal binding commitments. And you can see across the board these various examples from Japan, Australia, the U.S., committing to about a 26 to 32% reduction in the current emissions of greenhouse gases over the next 15 years. So rapid activities. The EU at 40%, and look at this one, Ethiopia, the highest commitment in the world right now. They're committing to a 64% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions compared to business as usual. Now, of course, that should be an example and role model for other countries to think about that. And when you think about these big numbers of these fossil fuel-based economies, it's a bit daunting. How are we going to get there? But I think that there's a secret, and the secret is in public health as a key vehicle to help countries make this choice, the easy choice and the obvious choice to get to a low-carbon economy. Regarding Ethiopia, that 64% commitment, they're already going for renewable energy. And just like I'll pick up John's cell phone here, we had landlines and all the expense for telephone lines, and you know the expression, leapfrogging in technology. Africa didn't have to go to landlines, they've all jumped to cell phones. And I get better cell phone reception in the middle of Ethiopia in somewhere completely removed from any village compared to 10 miles outside of Madison, Wisconsin. So, there's a chance for these developing countries that have not built the beltways and have not committed to heavy fossil fuel usage to really leapfrog in technology. And in Ethiopia, this is a brand new wind farm in Adama. It's the largest wind farm on the African continent. And the second largest wind farm is just north of here in Ethiopia. So Ethiopia already has two of the largest wind farms in Africa. And the Grand Renaissance Dam that they're building is going to be the largest. So hydro, wind, and solar, there's amazing potential. Now, those commitments that the countries have made for the Paris meeting of 40% for EU, 28 to 32% for the US, those are great commitments. But when you think about what's in the ground right now, 762 gigatons of carbon, that's what's in the ground, the oil that can be used. To stabilize at 2 degrees centigrade warming, we can only burn that much of the oil, 225 gigatons. That's if we want to stabilize at 2 degrees, or that much for 3 degrees. So even though the countries are committing to large cuts, say 30% reduction in fossil fuels, the climatologists are telling us that's not enough. We really need to get to 70%. And so the fossil fuel reserves are up to fivefold the limit for causing catastrophic climate change. This is where the divestment movement is taking off, where, you know, we really have to consider this and get off of fossil fuels very quickly. Now, the public health weapon, I think, is extremely important to communicate that, you know, when people are just having such a hard time thinking about getting off of fossil fuels, well, combating climate change could be cost-free, and I would argue using the public health message, the public health co-benefits of getting to more walkable, bikeable cities and cleaner air quality if you get off of fossil fuels, you'll have a net gain by combating climate change. Obvious examples, according to the World Health Organization and the Global Burden of Disease Report, 8 million people die prematurely every year because of air pollution. And of course, with a high meat diet that is very energy intensive to produce that protein, we could reduce cardiovascular risk by getting away from a red meat diet. And a new statistic out of the World Health Organization, more than 3 million people die prematurely from sedentary lifestyles, from physical inactivity. Golden opportunities. Here's a graph that shows the amount of biking, the percent of biking across states in the United States, and the levels of diabetes. And of course, more biking in a state, less diabetes, less obesity, less heart disease. I could show you three or four of these. They all look the same. It's obvious that alternative transportation through active transport gives you a healthier population. We actually ran a study in our own region, the U.S., and found that if we could convert short car trips to bicycle trips in the summertime, you'd save over 1,000 lives every year. You'd save $8 billion in avoided mortality and health costs in the Midwest region. And these studies have been looked at in Shanghai, in the U.K. You know, active transport gives you a healthier outcome, you know, reduction in colon cancer, breast cancer, heart disease, and even dementia. We've conducted a study that's going to go into the negotiations in Paris, into country profiles handed by the World Health Organization. I'll just show one example. This is looking at Canada. If Canada could attain the level of biking and walking that is done in the Netherlands, which is about 30 to 40% commuting, they would avoid 175,000 disability adjusted life years. And that's about 5% of their disease burden, their burden of disease. So again, it's an obvious health benefit to get to low carbon transportation. And then let me come back to Ethiopia, where I spent half the year on sabbatical last year. Ethiopia, in the top government priorities, one of them is to develop a climate-resilient green economy. It's the only country I know that has this as a national priority. And the village that I was in, the city I was in, which was Bahir Dar, Ethiopia, north of Addis Ababa, is rapidly becoming a motorized city. These are these motorized rickshaws. There are many of them. And they are determined to become a bike-friendly city again, how they used to be. So we're helping them in designing alternative transportation to make it safe. We're beginning to run analysis. If you could switch to bicycle trips, I'll show you this preliminary data that shows that for every kilometer of biking per week that you make, you get more and more disability-adjusted life year reductions. You could, you know, you reduce the burden of disease. The blue line is you reduce your carbon emissions. The green line is the travel costs go down, and this is showing just a slight increase in the time that it takes to get to work. So biking makes you healthier, reduces carbon emissions, is cheaper, is more equitable transportation as well, which is very important for women, especially women and other people that can't afford things in this country in particular. This is a slide I'm sure you have seen over and over again from the World Health Organization showing that outdoor air pollution, especially in urban centers, kills more than 3 million people every year. Indoor air pollution, a big problem, more than 4 million people die prematurely. And you can see this is the Injera bread kitchen of the university that I was working in. And you can see that this is a woman that is making injera bread, that delicious sourdough Ethiopian flatbread. And these beams here, these are not just beams of rays from heaven, right? That's sunlight showing how much particulate air pollution is in that environment. Here's another woman with, look at all the smoke. And that's from burning over these open flames. And this is a problem all over the world that needs to be addressed. Well, there are solutions. And this is a biogas digester that's being built to power that kitchen, to provide cleaner energy, which is going to be an immediate benefit for the women working there. But there's another side of this. Look at all the wood that has to be burned for baking. So we're starting a university-wide campaign to switch from wood stoves to those powered by hydro, wind, solar, and biogas. You have a triple win: women's health, forest protection, and climate resilience. So there's an opportunity, just like this conference is about health in all policies. Here's a golden opportunity cutting across health, energy, food security, and even forest conservation. Finally, I'll just tell you there's a major effort. It's fantastic. The Obama administration, working with the USAID, has a program called Power Africa. When Ethiopia declared a 64% reduction in their carbon emissions over the next 15 years, the U.S. ambassador, was at a signing agreement saying, "We will help you go there. We will invest more money in Power Africa to help you leapfrog in technology." Finally, the other sector to be thinking about is the food sector and agriculture. This is a project in Uganda turning its W2E, which stands for waste to energy. It's a biogas project, and you can see at the bottom the fertilizer coming out of the biogas digestion goes into growing crops. So you have energy and you have fertilizer. It's a major, it's a win-win, it's a low-hanging fruit opportunity. Lastly, we need to be thinking outside of the box. Where do we get our protein? And we're working, Valerie Stahl is a PhD candidate working on the possibility of using mealworms for protein, and this is a project in Zambia, Africa. Notice that per dry weight, mealworms give you twice as much protein per kilogram compared to chickens, and even more than red meat. So, it's a good idea as far as nutrition, and of course for the environment, when you think about all the energy and fossil fuels that go into producing protein from meat, compared mealworms compared to low or high dairy or meat consumption, it's a no-brainer. Of course, it's environmentally friendly. So I'll end by saying that there's a lot of opportunity when you think about the health benefits from going to a clean energy society. And last year at the climate summit in New York, 400 people marched, and other people around the world were marching at the same time. That this is the time now we can really change society and make some major benefits. So with that, I'll thank you very much. And there's a MOOC on these issues about the health benefits from climate change policy. The MOOC, Massive Open Online Course, is free. And you can copy that website and sign up. It starts on Monday, and it's free. So thank you very much.